Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
What's going on, all you crazy ghost enthusiasts out there? It's your boy, Ghost Joe. Welcome to episode 9 of the Warped Reality Podcast. I hope you guys had an awesome Halloween. I hope you guys enjoyed the last episode of the Warped Reality Podcast featuring an interview with Ms. Shauna Stoker. Very, very cool person. Very interesting. And I hope you guys go back and listen to everything else, including season 1 Ghost Hacks podcast. I had some great interviews and I have some great interviews coming up for you guys as well. But let's get into it, shall we? So I have some cool stories coming up for you guys, as well as all of your favorite segments coming at you. The first thing I'd like to talk about, though, have you guys ever heard of the Winchester Mansion? Well, I mean, it's a pretty... You know, a lot of people have heard about it, I guess, but I'm going to give you a little rundown about it in the Ghost Joe fashion. So here we go. So the Winchester Mansion, located in San Jose, California, is a place that fascinates paranormal enthusiasts as well as history buffs due to its mystery and unusual construction. The lore of this unfinished farmhouse, bought in 1886 by the heiress of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company fortune, Sarah Winchester, is as legendary as it is confusing. The legend goes like this. After losing both her only child and her husband in New England, Winchester consulted a Boston psychic who told her that her family is cursed by the souls of all who were killed by the Winchester Rifles, which included... many American Indians, as well as Civil War soldiers and a whole slew of other people. The only way to placate these restless souls, said the psychic, was to build a rambling house for them to inhabit. She soon after moved to San Jose and started her lifelong construction of the Mystery House. There are now 160 rooms, 2,000 doors, 10,000 windows, 47 stairways, 47 fireplaces, maybe one for each stairway, 13 bathrooms, and 6 kitchens. If you noticed, some of these numbers don't add up. That's because there are many windows, doors, and stairways that lead to nowhere. Tourists are warned to not wander off because they can be lost for hours. I know I have a terrible sense of direction, so I'd probably be lost for, like, forever. As alluring and deliciously paranormal as that legend sounds, there may be a more logical, albeit unorthodox and sad reasoning behind the construction monstrosity. You see, when Sarah was younger, she was known to be a very beautiful woman, known to many as the Belle of New Haven. As she got older, she became crippled with rheumatoid arthritis and had lost much of her beauty. She became a recluse and became obsessed with privacy. She barely ventured out of her house. Due to her refusal to speak publicly, journalists and neighbors began to speculate and get very creative with their reasoning behind her behavior. So Sarah had died on September 5th, 1922, at 10:45 p.m. of heart failure. She was buried next to her husband and their infant child in Evergreen Cemetery in New Haven, Connecticut. Following her death, the home was auctioned to the highest bidder, who then turned it into an attraction for the public, of course. The first tourist walked through the house in February 1923, only 5 months after Winchester died. That's pretty disrespectful. But yeah, so that's the history of the Winchester Mystery House. So listen up, guys. Right now, I'd like to premiere a new segment that I have coming out right now. It is called Haunted eBay. This segment is all about exploring some of the weirdest, strange, creepy, and haunted items on eBay. Ever since I was a young lad, I enjoy checking out the weird section of eBay to see what was for sale and, you know, just to get a kick out of some of this stuff. In this segment, I'll pick out a few of these to highlight. Just note that the auctions may be ended or increased by the time you're hearing this. And I take no responsibility if you decide to get any of these items and crazy stuff starts happening. I'll have a page on warpedrealitypodcast.com with all of the links to the items as I mention them. So check there periodically to see these and other listings as they still may be active. By the way, while there, check out all previous episodes, guest profiles, merch, and more. Also, it would help me tremendously if you left me a review either on the website or through Apple Podcasts. Also, if you have a paranormal experience that you would like to share, please call me at 845-379-1331 and leave me a voicemail. It's only 3 minutes, so if you run out of time, call back and continue with your story. And you could do so anonymously. If you do not want to leave a voicemail, you could always email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com and I will read it for you. So there you go. Here we go with the new segment, Haunted eBay. So the first item, in parentheses, it says, I think it is haunted, harmonica, vintage, plastic injector, no reserve. And right now the current bid is 25 cents and it has three bids already. It is located in Lebanon, Ohio. So let's see. The description says possibly haunted harmonica, vintage plastic injector, Corp rock and roll. Vintage dust inside, no extra charge. Original. I've had it since 1978 after an uncle passed away, so it's at least that old or older, unsure of the actual age. I think it's haunted. Can't seem to get rid of it. Just when I think it's gone, I find it again. I am positive that I threw this away multiple times over the years and again last month. You buy it, you're on your own. Please do not mail it back to me. I am not responsible for anything that has to do with this harmonica once it is mailed. If it comes back before you receive, I will keep mailing it until it gets the idea. Oh, and it's free shipping. How wonderful. Oh, here's one that you guys are definitely going to want to go for. All yellow with white tip, rare haunted candy corn piece. Yes, yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is a real candy corn candy. Okay. Oh, the time left is only 17 hours, but I'm sure it's probably going to be relisted. The starting bid is $333. It has zero bids right now. I don't see how that could be possible. How could anyone not want to spend over $300 on a single piece of candy corn? And the buy it now price is $6,333. And the shipping is $4.75 from San Clarita, California. So let's see here. All yellow with white tip, rare haunted candy corn piece. This jumped out of a fresh bag of candy corn onto a hello sticky note. Made a spinner paper for it and answered yes or no by pointing when spun. Haunted and rare. And the bonus, they're giving you a bonus with this, guys. Bonus is an ugly orange candy corn that's its friend, supposedly. So, yeah, get on that bidding because I'm sure it's going to be relisted soon. And this last one is Crying Boy, a cursed painting. And it says, beware. The price is $500. Shipping is $79.90. And it's coming from Las Vegas, Nevada. So now I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about the history of these Crying Boy, paintings in a minute, cause it's very, very interesting. This one, for some reason it has a different kind of history to it. I don't know if they made up the history or if they didn't know the history or whatever, but this is what it says here for the Crying Boy haunted painting. And then it says, beware. This painting was originally commissioned by the loving parents of the child and was to be painted by a renowned local artist at the time. When the boy died unexpectedly of a mysterious illness, the painting remains unfinished. The parents obviously didn't choose to have a reminder of their late, much beloved son. The artist then stored the incomplete canvas in a dark and dusty corner of her studio. There it remained for many years, a forgotten and unpleasant reminder of the boy's untimely death.
Years later, the artist herself became afflicted with a mysterious illness that left her disabled and unable to paint. During the move-out and the emptying of the studio, among all of the many stacks of canvases, this painting emerged, rediscovered and unknowingly brought into the light despite all of the unfortunate circumstances that had surrounded it. Upon seeing the painting again after all of these years, the artist became violently ill. She kept a diary and in her entry reported that she felt as if it engulfed and surrounded her with the emotions she had originally many years ago. It became as fresh in her mind as it was when she originally applied paint to canvas. She explained that as an artist paints, they develop a unique closeness to the subject of the painting, pouring many hours into each and every detail to bring that subject to life. She then promptly demanded that this canvas be immediately disposed of and destroyed. Mysteriously, it wound up in a bin in a local thrift store. Another artist, unaware of the nature of the backstory of this poor, unfortunate child, purchased the painting from the thrift store with the intention of painting over it in an attempt to reuse a perfectly good canvas. Feelings of extreme agitation and frustration emerged after repeated coats of gesso, when the image of the boy continued to reemerge. It could not be covered. After her fruitless attempt and inability to continue to give this canvas new life, the artist decided to let her imagination run wild and intuitively produced what would become this painting, The Crying Boy. Upon completion, due to the dark and foreboding that this painting has conjured, it has been hidden from view, again to be stored in a darkened corner upside down and turned to face the wall. It has made anyone who views it uneasy and uncomfortable. As stated, there have been many reports of supernatural occurrences surrounding the painting's long history. Images within the painting have been known to change position. Anyone who has witnessed this image has experienced extreme discomfort to be in physical presence of this painting. There are dark and somewhat hidden messages contained within that were intuitively relayed to the second artist from unknown supernatural forces. Let the buyer beware of this cautionary tale. Disclaimer: any paranormal items must be sold for entertainment purposes only. You must be at least 18 years of age to purchase. You also agree that the seller is not responsible for any experiences or effects that manifest or do not manifest. You are responsible for your own actions. By purchasing this painting, you agree with these terms. All paranormal items should be considered a novelty to those that either do not truly believe in the paranormal or expect immediate results. This sale is final. So what do you guys think? You want to go in halfsies with me? You know, of course, I don't have any room over here at my place to put this painting. So, you know, I'll give you a little bit of money towards it. And, you know, you could keep it over near you. How does that sound? So let's get into this crying boy painting thing that I know about. So back in 1985, Ron and Mary Hall lost their home to a fire when a frying pan burst into flames. Although the whole house was destroyed, one item remained: a print of a painting of a crying boy. Ron Hall's brother, Peter, who was a fireman, claimed that this wasn't the first time this had occurred. Peter stated that he had witnessed many fires in which everything was ruined except for the crying boy painting. This was published in a newspaper called The Sun. The response to the article was overwhelming. Within a day, hundreds of readers had reached out to the newspaper claiming to be jinxed by the painting. It all began in the 1950s. An Italian artist named Giovanni Bragolini made a series of paintings that depicted a young child crying. He sold those paintings to tourists as a reminder of the orphans of World War II. Mass prints of the paintings were sold across the country. Some people claim that the paintings had caused the death of family members. Others reported that when they tried to burn the prints, the painting would not catch on fire. Even restaurants with crying boy prints were burned to the ground. Eventually, enough was enough. With people desperate to get rid of their copies of the painting, the editor of The Sun came up with a solution. He told readers to send in their paintings and that The Sun would destroy them once and for all. On Halloween, of course you pick Halloween, right? Newspaper staff burned more than 2,500 copies of the painting. One story claims that the boy in the painting was an orphan living in Madrid. Despite a priest's warning that fires broke out wherever the boy went, the artist decided to adopt the child. Sometime later, the artist's studio burned down. The little boy ran away, never to be seen again. That's a crazy story, isn't it, guys? So yeah, you want to go halfsies? So now let's get into I Read It on Reddit. And this one's entitled, Had a Strange Leprechaun Experience. Let's get ready for some St. Paddy's Day. How about it, guys? All right. And you know, we just had Halloween. Let's just skip over everything else and go straight to St. Paddy's Day. I don't usually use Reddit, so I don't know if this is an appropriate spot for this, but here goes. I had an encounter I have never been able to explain. When I was 10, I was wandering through my backwoods on St. Patrick's Day. Of all days, St. Patrick's Day, huh? By that point, I was well aware that leprechauns were not real, so I wasn't looking for anything so much as just killing some time. There were no neighbors behind our house, not or anything, just woods. I knew the woods very well and was extremely comfortable spending days wandering around. At one point, I stopped walking for a bit and was just looking around when I heard some sticks break. I looked over, fully thinking I was about to see a deer, when all of a sudden out walks a 7-foot-tall leprechaun with orange hair. I thought they were supposed to be short. Anyway, no mask on or anything like that. Just a huge dude dressed as a leprechaun in the middle of the effing woods with orange hair and a beard. He didn't see me, and I totally froze up. I watched him walk for maybe 10 to 15 seconds. The only thing I can remember thinking is, I can't do anything. I was frozen, but somehow managed to yell out, "Hey, you!" Dude stopped in his tracks and turned his head and looked at me and sort of grinned. Lost all courage at that point and turned around and I ran faster than I have ever ran in my life. Have no clue if he gave chase or not. But in my mind, it felt like he was right behind me, and I never slowed or looked back. This experience has drove me nuts ever since it happened, because I just don't know how to explain it. Nobody knew where I was going, so it couldn't have been a setup. I've asked my parents, and they both say they didn't have anything to do with it, and thought I just made it up as a kid. Thinking about it as an adult, my best guess is that I saw something that day and my brain just wasn't able to process it, and my mind turned it into something that I could understand, and since it was St. Paddy's Day, I ended up seeing a leprechaun. I honestly have no idea though, and it has stuck with me for years. I've never seen anything paranormal or whatever you want to call it since. Also, I've always hated the fact that in a world where people see ghosts, UFOs, and Bigfoot, I happen to see the most ridiculous thing possible. Figured I would throw it out there to see if anybody had any explanations or similar experiences. Well, being the fact that he was so tall, well, first off, let's go through this, right? So you were 10 years old, right? So when you're 10, everything looks much bigger than it possibly could have been. So if you're 10, you know, maybe you were thinking he might have been 7 feet tall. Maybe he was 6 feet tall, which is a normal height for most, you know, grown men. And being that it was St. Paddy's Day, it could have been just some crazy dude dressed up as a leprechaun going to some crazy St. Paddy's Day party. But yeah, who knows? Or it could have been a 7-foot leprechaun. Let you be the judge. Has anybody out there ever seen a leprechaun? Especially a gigantic leprechaun such as this? Give me a call. Send me an email. You know the number. So as I'm recording this, Halloween weekend just passed. It went great. As you know, November 1st was the beginning of my much needed vacation from the insane work hours and crazy environment that I've been subjected to the past few months. This past weekend was also the first annual Warren's Seekers of the Supernatural Paracon. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend due to work, but I did have a friend that was able to go, and he was kind enough to do a written review of the Paracon for me to read to you guys. He also included some pictures of some of the artifacts from the Warren's Museum, which has since been permanently closed. You can view the pictures on www.warpedrealitypodcast.com. So here we go. Hey, Ghost Joe. So I was so psyched to go to this event. It was 2 days, Saturday, October 30th, and Sunday, October 31st, Halloween, held at Courtyard by the Marriott in Waterbury, Connecticut. I was able to go to the 31st. Unfortunately, most of the lectures were only given on the first night, but there were many vendors there, from horror authors like Dwayne E. Caulfield to demonologists such as Carl and Keith Johnson, to psychics, and even a family team of paranormal investigators. I talked with many of these people, and yes, I got their info and told them about the Warped Reality podcast, and many seemed very interested to be interviewed on the show. One of the vendors, a guy named Dan from theradicals.org, had an original crying boy painting. You could not pay me enough to have that in my house. He even makes Ouija boards out of casket wood. This guy is just asking for trouble. But he had some great stories, and I think he would make a great guest for you. I also met Arnie C. Johnson, who the most recent Conjuring movie was based on. He seems like a nice guy and may be willing to talk to you also. But let's talk about the Warren's artifact display. It was fantastic. It had a satanic ritual idol doll used to perform rituals, a shadow doll which is used to curse a person, and yes, both the real and movie versions of Annabelle. Although everyone was there to see Annabelle, as was I, there were some items that were missing that I feel should have been there, like the Perrin family music box and the demonic toy monkey. Oh, it did have a conjuring mirror also, and some other creepy things as well. So make sure you tell everyone to check out the website for the pics. Although it was the first one, by the looks of the crowd in the main event and the hour and a half line I had to wait just to see Annabelle, I'm sure this is only the first of many Paracons to come, and I can't wait until next year. Maybe you'll be able to go and look into the eyes of that creepy-ass doll like I did. It's definitely an experience I won't soon forget. Hey man, so thanks again for giving me that awesome account of the Warren's Paracon and for letting everybody there know about the Warped Reality podcast. The check is in the mail. So, guys, I have been, you know, continuing to watch the Chucky series. Again, I didn't have a lot of time. Now I'm on vacation, so I'm going to be stacking up on some horror movies and some cool stuff to give you guys some horrible reviews on. Like I said, I've been watching the Chucky series. It's up to episode 4 already. It's a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun. You know, the original guy is voicing it, as I said in the last episode, and it's a very, very cool show. So if you haven't seen it yet, I definitely recommend it. It's very fun. The biggest thing I'm looking forward to, coming up next week, actually next Friday, is the new Ghostbusters movie, Ghostbusters Afterlife. It's going to have the kid from Stranger Things is the main character in it. And I believe that a lot of the people from the original Ghostbusters movies are going to make cameos in it, which is awesome. I can't wait to see that movie. You know, that's like a blast from the past. And my favorite thing about it is that it's a continuation. They're not trying to remake anything. They're not trying to rehash things. They're making a continuation of the Ghostbusters movies, and I think it's going to be great. Unlike the female Ghostbusters movie that came out a couple of years ago that was just a complete flop and terrible, that should never have been made. That to me, that like totally discredited and discouraged the whole franchise. But hopefully this one is going to bring it back and get more kids into the Ghostbusters, man. Come on. It's the Ghostbusters. Really? So, guys, I wanted to start a new segment that I'm going to need your help for. So, please, please give me a call, 845-379-1331. email me, ghostjoeny@gmail.com. Hell, you could even send me a voice message and email it to me. Why not that? Any way you want. But my new segment that I'd like to start is I want to bring a few local haunted legends or local haunted locations from everybody's city or state that you live in, that you listen to this podcast. So, you know, if you live in Canada, if you live in another country, I want to know about your local haunted spots. So even if you don't know much about it, give me the name and I'll research it myself and we'll do a little piece on it on different episodes. I think that would be very cool. I think, you know, it would encourage more people to get involved in their local history. So definitely do that, guys. I think it would be great. And I think it would be interesting for everybody to know, you know, the issues and the haunted spots around the world. So there you go. 845-379-1331. GhostJoeNY@gmail.com. And now let's check in with April for April's Creepy Corner. Take it away, April.
Hello, spooky friends. This is April's Creepy Corner, and in this episode, we are talking all about the Philip Experiment. The Philip Experiment was a 1972 parapsychology experiment that was conducted in Toronto, Ontario, to determine whether subjects can communicate with fictionalized ghosts through expectations of human will. The belief in ghosts date all the way back to the earliest days of the oral tradition. From the first recorded moments of human history, there has been a strong desire to believe that there is life after death. It seems that our brains may even be compelled to believe in it. A poll in 2019 concluded that nearly half of Americans believe that both ghosts and demons exist, and that is despite evidence that belief in orthodox traditions is on the decline. It seems almost necessary to our mental health and stability to maintain that death is merely a transition as opposed to an end. I mean, just take a look at Facebook, for example. Many people still maintain connections with the deceased's profiles as a way to cope with their loss. Dr. A.R.G. Owen, a trained mathematician, got together a group of 8 people from the Toronto Society for Physical Research. Although all these people were interested in the paranormal, none of them have ever exhibited or experienced psychic or ESP abilities. The members of the team included Dorothy, a housewife, trained in bookkeeping and accounting. Al, a self-employed heating engineer. Lorne, an industrial engineer. Andy, an artistic woman who studied philosophy and ancient history. Bernice, an accountant. Sydney, a sociology student. Sue, a former nurse. Iris, who was the wife of Dr. Owen, author, nurse, and social worker. And then there were 2 observers, George Owen and a psychiatrist named Dr. Joel Whitten. So the group chose a name for this fabricated ghost, and they chose Philip Aylesford. They made up a finely detailed life story for him. So basically, he was a man who lived in England in the 17th century. And then he cheated on his wife with a woman who was accused of witchcraft. And on a side note, the accuser was Philip's wife, if you want to talk about sweet revenge. And she was burned at the stake. In 1654, Philip then committed suicide. The group was incredibly dedicated and serious about all of this. They even traveled to England and visited the place that they claimed that he lived, took photos of everything, and another member sketched his portrait, and then they met regularly to discuss the life of this fictitious person. So the members held seances, meditation sessions, and conversations regularly regarding this man that they just invented. They did this for an entire year, and nothing happened. And then, in 1973, it appeared as though Philip had, for lack of better words, been born. His communication began as simple taps, and it grew more detailed. During communication, he was able to give answers to historic events of the time. He also began physically moving a table to interact. They contacted him primarily through table turning or movements. So they would ask a question, and the table would rotate or tilt as the letters spoken to create words. It was really like a Ouija board. His abilities grew, so he could flicker lights, levitate the table, and even chase people with it. In 1974, the group decided to take a break from their meetings. Several of the members then started to experience poltergeist phenomenon in their own homes. And then this activity ceased when they started to meet for the sessions again. The group declared their experiment a success. But what the heck was going on? They had proven that without psychokinetic talents, phenomenon could be produced. But who was Philip? Or what was Philip? Dr. Owen concluded that not all apparitions originate in the subconscious mind. In fact, he hypothesized that the energy needed to create a spirit came from the combined focus of the group on that single particular subject. Dr. Owen recreated this experiment many times, and each time he got the exact same results. So whether the data is true or not, I personally would still like to believe that ghosts are truly the spirits of our loved ones. What do you think? Well, thanks for listening and stay spooky.
Thank you for that awesome segment, April. I tend to agree with April in that aspect where I go more towards the spiritual explanation more than the scientific explanation. But I do like to put both sides out there so anybody could decide for themselves and see what they feel. It may not even be either one of those explanations, what people experience with this stuff. So who knows? But that's what makes this all so interesting, doesn't it? So that'll do it for me this episode, guys. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you to April for everything. And thank you to all my contributors and everything for helping me out and getting through my crazy work schedule and everything. And I appreciate everybody for listening. Please check out all the social media. I have a TikTok. I have YouTube. I have it. And you can find all those links on warpedrealitypodcast.com. And leave me a review, why don't you? And that's about it, guys. For Ghost Joe, I'm out.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can leave me a voicemail at 845-379-1331 or email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You could do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or warpedrealitypodcast.com. Have an awesome night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.